The recent criticism about the Pope and Vatican communication brings me to discuss with you another point. In our service to the Church, we need to be constantly asking ourselves whether the limits and defects of our own communication skills in any given moment are making it more difficult for others to understand the Church's message, so that they reject it, or whether the message itself is being rejected, even though it has been understood, or precisely because it has been understood. We are called to be witnesses to God's love for humanity and for this world, but we cannot hide from the fact that the Gospel of Christ often becomes a sign of contradiction during the course of the vicissitudes of the world. We cannot fool ourselves into thinking that a perfect communication strategy could ever make it possible for us to communicate every message the Church has to offer in a way that avoids contradiction and conflict. Truth be told, success in this sense would be a bad sign. At the very least, it would indicate ambiguity or compromise rather than authentic communication. I am convinced that in the present Pope and in his predecessor, and doubtless in others that came before them, we have had and continue to have two eminent witnesses of the courage to speak the truth, to be oneself, and not to become enslaved by the desire of approval, which is one of the greatest idols of the modern world and of contemporary communications. It is important to realize that many of the things the Church says, and that we should say if we would be faithful to her, go against the grain. We need to hope that this is the case, not because we are outmoded or out of touch with the times in which we live. But because the Gospel of Christ is itself often against the grain. To preach forgiveness in situation of hate and desperate intestine conflict is against the grain. We had the Pope for 7 days preaching peace in a situation of long conflicts and hatred between peoples. It was really a courageous presence. To preach a vision of human sexuality rooted in love and responsibility is against the grain. To preach hope for a life beyond death to a world that is closed in on itself is against the grain, just as is every concrete, everyday choice founded on precisely that hope which sees beyond death and yearns for eternal life. Here we come to the very heart of communications in the Church, the heart of the Church's mission of communication to and for the world, the hard core that is strong enough to resist the trials and travails of history is the credibility of the Gospel message, the authoritative character of the message that comes from authentic witness to the faith in the lives of the faithful. I am convinced that much of the respect that John Paul II earned from the world and from professional communicators was at the end of the day a consequence not so much of his charisma as it was of his personal credibility. He was long criticized as a conservative, a retrograde, the old Polish fellow unwise to the ways of the modern world and modern ideas. But at the end, he was respected as a man of courage and integrity, firmly rooted in his faith, and able to bear personal witnesses to it through all the different trials he faced during his long life. Pope Benedict XVI has a very different personality, but no one can doubt his integrity and his intellectual and spiritual coherence. From this comes his courage to take and to maintain positions that are unpopular for those who have embraced a dominant culture. Think of his recent letter to the bishops. It is a most personal and admirably courageous communication. He expresses himself in the first person, repeating and defending the priorities and the criteria of action that he has set out for his pontificate, and leaves no room for doubt that his choices as a general search for reconciliation have the deepest inspiration from the Gospel. Here we are approaching the crucial point of the service of the Church and of the faithful in the world of communication, in dialogue and in collaboration with all communicators of goodwill. The crucial point is to manage to put communication in the right perspective of a dedicated service to the common good of humanity, to the discernment of the presence of good and evil in the concrete history of our world, and in this way allow to see the different faces of good, to promote them, and unmask the faces of evil to limit their force. In this perspective, a positive alliance, a positive synergy between the communication of the Church and the communication for the world must be possible and constantly pursued. A few weeks ago, a journalist asked me to share my thoughts on good and evil in communications. In particular, he asked me to identify the principal faces of evil in our work and in the flow of communications. It is easy to paint the big picture. The hard part is recognizing the real, concrete, individual cases and situations, and then to put people on their guard, especially those most susceptible to the blandishments or trick of evil. There is the classical face of falsehood, more or less explicit, and often mixed with half-truths, motivated by interest of different kinds. It always aims to deceive. There is the face of pride, of self-referencing, self-centeredness, that despises fellows and refuses to listen to other positions, but seeks always and only the absolute affirmation of the superiority of his own position. There is the face of oppression and injustice, that would deny his fellows freedom to gather information and give expression. The face of injustice that denies the voice of his fellows and so denies their basic human dignity and their rightful place in the society. There is the face of debauched sensuality that seeks to use and possess and has respect neither for the body nor for the image of the other. This face expresses the materialistic hedonism that turns person into brutes. There is the face of escapism, which, seeking refuge in imaginary or virtual worlds, completely subverts the purpose of the new communication technologies, making them a source of isolation and slavery. There is the face of division that seeks to demolish dialogue, to undermine all efforts at mutual understanding among people of different creeds and cultures, and to set them amongst one against one other, rather than to help them come together in genuine appreciation. This face becomes the face of conflict and war. We need to learn to recognize these faces of evil for what they are, in order to make communication able freely to serve the good, that is, to further the construction of a culture of respect, of dialogue and friendship, as the message of the World of Communication says this year, a culture of respect, of dialogue and friendship, and to place the immense potential of contemporary communication in the service of communion in the Church and of the unity of the whole human family. I saw the work of the Pope in these days, this message, continuous message for peace, for reconciliation, for understanding with the different peoples and religions as an example, a really incredible example of this communication for the union, for peace. Communication for communion, communicating with a view to unity. This is the best expression I can find of my vocation as a communicator, of our vocation as communicators. I have learned to need to discover ever anew the difficulties and the struggles of this vocation, and also the beauty and the greatness of it. There is one precise moment that remains fixed in my memory, an unexpected illumination, in which, after many years, I understood the nature of the call to communicate. There was a young people's prayer gathering in the Paul VI audience hall, in which an aged John Paul II was taking part. My Vatican Television Center had set up 10 or so different two-way satellite links so that young people in other European cities could take part in the broadcast. Watching the giant screen in the hall, the Pope saw the various other gatherings. He heard the young people's greetings and greeted them in turn. We were all more than a little tense in the Vatican Television Center, owing to the complexity of the technical side of the operation. I remember, because I was crammed in a teeny tech van with my colleagues of the Vatican Television Center and was sweating buckets. At one point, the Pope, with his characteristic spontaneity, said, "What a marvelous thing is this television. I can see and speak with my young people in Krakow as though they were right here. Blessed be the television." I was stunned. Just think that of all the terrible, awful things that television does, and now the Pope is calling it blessed. But he was right, of course. He sees further, for television really can create communion. It can allow the Pope and the whole church, as it did that evening, to experience the joy of communion. And this is proof that television can be used for good, that it can truly be blessed. But this depends on us. We are the ones who must make television a source of blessing, and not leave it to become an instrument of corruption. This, then, is my vocation, our vocation. We are called to make sure that the press, the radio and television are tools and paths toward blessedness. Now, I shall have to work more, all of us shall have to work even harder, so that every day it will be more and more true to say, and so that we might be able to say with greater and greater convictions, also the internet is truly blessed. Thank you for your attention.